This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. For the first time in 20 years, the CDC says there is local spread of malaria. Four cases have been reported in Florida and one in Texas in the last 2 months. CBS medical consultant Dr. Celine Gounder.
Malaria is a medical emergency. It can be deadly if it's not treated promptly and correctly. Doctors in this country should be aware that Coartem, Malarone, and chloroquine may be used to treat milder forms of malaria, but if their patient has severe malaria, they should be treated with IV artesunate.
Cleanup is underway in the Midwest and South today after deadly weekend storms and tornadoes. WTTV-TV's Max Lewis is south of Indianapolis.
You could hear the house coming apart. It was a nightmare.
John Keith says he saw his walls and windows crumble around him.
It was overwhelming to see your house and see the outside and know that you were just sitting there and you could have been dead.
Wagner Group head Yevgeny Prigozhin says his march into Russia was not to overthrow President Putin, but to protest Russia's military strategy. Putin blasts organizers as traitors. CBS's Ian Lee with reaction in Ukraine.
They were cheering on the Wagner forces. They wanted to see some sort of civil war inside Russia because they thought if that happens over there, then the fighting here in Ukraine would probably lessen and that they would be able to retake their country quicker. And so there was some disappointment here when Wagner did a U-turn and said that they weren't going to march on Moscow.
It's a murder charge in Texas in the fatal shooting of an Uber driver. CBS's Steve Kathan reports.
A 48-year-old Kentucky woman is accused of fatally shooting her West Texas Uber driver after mistakenly believing she was being kidnapped and taken to Mexico. Police say Phoebe Copas saw traffic signs during the ride that read Juarez, Mexico. Believing she was being kidnapped, she pulled out a handgun and shot the 52-year-old driver in the head.
Police in Fort Myers, Florida are investigating how a single car went off the road last night and into a pond, causing five teenagers inside to drown. They worked at a nearby Texas Roadhouse restaurant. Restaurant partner Alan Hansen says a memorial has been set up.
The majority of Fort Myers has been served or sat by these people. You know, so we're just going to celebrate them. We want people to come and remember them. The table is in remembrance for now, but we will make a long-term memorial inside the restaurant.
Drivers in New York City will be charged extra in tolls to enter Manhattan south of 60th Street as part of a long-stalled congestion pricing plan. It's an effort to reduce congestion, improve air quality, and raise funds for the city's public transit system. This is CBS News.
Need to hire quality candidates fast? You need Indeed, the end-to-end hiring solution. Attract, interview, and hire candidates all in one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Look up cheese curds. You'll find this basic definition. Wet pieces of curdled milk.
Huh?
Well, it should also include the word delicious. As we continue to celebrate June Dairy Month, do you know how much milk is needed to make 1 pound of cheese curds? 16 ounces, 64 ounces, or 160 ounces, 10 pounds of milk? The answer comes up.
It actually is a sound of freshness.
Rachel Kerr is talking about squeaky curds. She's with the Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin and a bit of a cheese nerd.
Those elastic protein strands rub against the enamel of your teeth and create that characteristic sound.
The squeak turns stretchy when battered and deep fried. Some believe the idea to fry globs of cheese happened by accident. I consider it a happy accident. Okay, so did you guess it takes 10 pounds of milk to make 1 pound of curds? Now we want to know your favorite and where do you get your squeaky or deep fried curds? Go to our Civic Media Facebook page to share your answers. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Why a RICO charge, counselor? What's that mean to the layperson?
It was written for Organized Crime, Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act. That's where RICO comes from. The notion that you've got an entity whose purpose is to try to perpetuate some crime. It's more than just a singular event. It is a composite of kind of a corporate conspiracy doing things toward this illegal end.
Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Gary from Sussex. Hey, Gary.
Whose birthday is it? Is it both you guys' birthday or is it Dom's or Mike's?
It's my birthday today. Mike's was 2 days ago.
I'm going to sing a happy birthday, and I'm going to sing it the right way. Happy birthday to you, Mr. President of his radio station and his sidekick.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Tired of hearing only one side of the story? Do you want news and information from people who, like you, know what it's like to work hard every day and still struggle to make ends meet? Then tune in to The Rick Smith Show every weeknight from 8 to 10 p.m. right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Be part of the conversation. Tune in, turn on, and take back the American dream. The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Why a RICO charge, counselor? What's that mean to the layperson?
It was written for organized crime, racketeer influenced and corrupt organizations act. That's where RICO comes from. The notion that you've got an entity whose purpose is to try to perpetuate some crime. It's more than just a singular event. It is a composite of kind of a corporate conspiracy doing things toward this illegal end.
Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Portions of Native Roots Radio may be pre-recorded.
It's a good day to be indigenous.
Get up, stand up.
They are going to become more brutal.
Cody Cuff, Henry Cutter,
because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm awake and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. A Kadagi to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. We discuss local and national Native news and events, and as you know, Haley, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
You're absolutely right, Dana. This portion of the show is supported by Minnesota 350, a grassroots organization fighting for climate justice.
Yes, they do. Hey, it's Monday, and it's a great way to kick off with Dr. Stately here. Dr. Stately is president and CEO of Native American Community Clinic here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis. And we're always fun and happy to reach out with Dr. Stately. And I just got to tell you, Dr. Stately, I want that T-shirt. I don't know what got over me, but it looks like you got a good one again. Oh, welcome.
I think this is, thank you. I think this is our 20th anniversary shirt. I'm not sure. Anyway, we added a couple T-shirts. We had our traditional healing conference a couple weeks ago. We gave out T-shirts to the folks that came to that conference as well. And then I think we also, we have a 20th anniversary shirt. I think that's maybe this one.
Right on. Congratulations again.
I can't remember.
Congratulations again on 20 years. That's so important.
Thank you.
And so important to be in the community as you are. And, you know, not only you, I see you all around, but I see the people that work for you that are in the community and really are in the community. And that says a lot about the people that you have working there.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot. Over the last several years, since I stepped into the executive leadership role, I really have tried hard to, one of the things the board hired me to do 5-6 years ago, it's been actually longer than, it'll be 7 years. And it's been 7 years in December that I've been here.
Wow.
But one of the things they asked me to do is drive community engagement, get out and do more community outreach and community engagement and broader partnerships and our relationships. And I think, as a result of that, we've been, recruiting and bringing more people in from the community. A big part of our mission is to reduce the health disparities in the community. And there's all kinds of different ways in which you do that. Like, you can't do it solely just by seeing the same people come through the door every single day. So you have to have a multi-pronged strategy. And that includes things like, hiring and creating pathways for people from within the community that you serve to actually step into, entry-level positions and other positions in healthcare, give them an opportunity to get on a pathway to build a career that's going to give them a livable wage. We can help our community become healthier and stronger just by providing opportunities for them to, gainful employment and, pathways out of poverty. That's a really, that's a really important thing. It's one of the driving forces of healthcare inequity Of course, in our communities is, you know, both deep, deep poverty in our community and then also the houselessness crisis. So Enac is squarely in the center of that sort of that work and hiring people from the community so that they trust us and engage with us and having our people out there, like I went to a service this weekend. On Saturday, and a lot of our community members were there, and a lot of our staff were there. I'll go to another funeral in a couple of days because one of our patients passed away. And those are ways we show up for each other. You know, our foundational value is, you know, to show up and be a good relative in our community. And we try to do what we would do for any relative, which is show up when you're, show up not just when you're happy, when things are going good and great, show up also when you need support, when you need a shoulder to cry on, somebody to lean on, someone to grieve with you. And those are important things to do. So.
Yeah, that was an amazing amount of people. There was over 300 people there this Saturday, and that says a lot to the family and how connected that they are into the community too.
Yeah, a young man will be going to say goodbye to and pray for him and wish him well on his journey. It'd be on either tomorrow, I think, or Wednesday or Thursday, probably. He was a member of our drum group. Neck has a drum group. Young man, clean and sober. Didn't realize like a medical condition that he might have had that sort of kind of took his life. So just really sad situation. So I think, one of the things I think is really important is there's a lot of mystification still around how he passed, but I think, he was struggling with depression and anxiety and a few other things. And, it's unclear whether or not, or he might have had some health condition that he wasn't really getting help for. Mm-hmm. And I think so many times, one of the things I worry about with our relatives is I know it is, it's hard to ask for help. It's especially hard to ask as men. These are two young men who died in our community, right? Significant. Right. Hard to ask for help, hard to voice when you need assistance. Sometimes as men, we don't, we're not really, taught from a very young age to sort of be vulnerable and to ask for help. We're kind of taught, and the messages we might receive in society for sure, but also within our community, maybe also within our family, sort of kind of buck up, right. I can't remember how many times I heard as a boy, don't cry. That's not something that, the old, right. I'll give you something to cry about kind of a thing. Right. Yeah. So it's I hear that enough times in your life, you're not going to ask for any help. But I think that part of it is we do really have to encourage our men to speak up and to ask for help and to let us know when they're struggling, when they're challenging, when they're having a hard time. Our young warriors, especially, we need those young men in our lives. They have children, they have work to do, they have, right. They have a responsibility to take over, when old guys like you and I are gone, right? So
exactly. Yeah, yeah, it's hard. I always felt like for myself, if I was vulnerable and started crying, I always had the fear in the back of my head that I would never stop. Isn't that weird? I mean, that I would never stop crying. So then I would fuck up and not cry or hold it back or not want to talk about it.
I think that's a fairly common thing. I mean, I think I felt that way at different times in my life. I think it's an indication of how things feel, when you sort of hold it all in for a period of time. It's a little bit a volcano, oh gosh, I'm afraid to let even just a little bit out because it feels like it might never stop. Right.
Right.
It's an indication of how much you're holding on to. And just think about how much weight that takes in your life and your daily lived experience to hold on to that. And I don't think awesome. Also, when I look around our community, I don't see a whole lot of meaningful programs for men to give them the space to be able to talk for that. It's one of the reasons why we started the young, we had a young warriors camp about almost 1 month ago. We held a young warriors camp in not too far out from the Twin Cities here. We rented their camp. We brought in people, elders and other folks to talk to them. We gave them space to talk, you know, and to sort of kind of talk about their feelings, their emotional life and things that they were struggling with. And, you know, those men opened up. They said, you know, they also did interviews. So we recorded some of the interviews with them and we're going to use that project. I think what we learned from that is that, like, men need a place to talk. And so we're going to keep doing that over the next several years.
Wow, that's excellent. I'd love to get involved with that. That's a big part of healing for me was being able to talk and to move on and to be able to know that if I do cry, it won't cry for the next 20 years, but I'll cry for a good reason.
We're here. Healing, actually.
Right. Exactly. We're here with Dr. Stately, and we'll be back after this short break. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake.
Please stay with us.
When we heal from our traumas,
when we face our fears,
let go of our addictions,
when we relearn our values,
when we live our teachings,
respecting our elders,
cherishing and honoring our children,
when we honor and take care of our spirit,
there will be no room left for sexual violence.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
New at Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces. Kuma Wood Stoves and Fireplace Inserts. American-made, sturdy and efficient wood heaters. All models qualify for 30% tax credit you can earn for installing efficient and renewable wood heat. Come see the new wood-burning Kuma Stoves and Fireplace Inserts.
Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces has been selling wood-burning products since 1977. Kuma wood burners are hard-working home heaters made from heavy, laser-cut steel. Kuma stoves and fireplace inserts have cast iron doors and large self-cleaning glass windows. You can see the firelight and feel the heat from their efficient fire. One of Woodland's many choices to make fire work for you and your home.
Work with the chimney and insulation experts. They not only install, but will guide you if you want to install yourself. Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces has over 35 working wood, gas, and electric units on display at the corner of East Franklin and Riverside Avenue in Minneapolis. Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, out of the ordinary products and services.
This is Leonard Peltier. I am in Coleman 1 U.S. Penitentiary, and I'm listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by the Native American Community Clinic on Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis, honoring health and tradition.
Yes, and we're here with Dr. Stately, the CEO of Native American Community Clinic here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, on the Franklin Avenue corridor. And I don't know, we're talking about healing. We're talking about a lot of things here. After these sudden deaths in our community, it's thing that we think about and talk about a little more than normal, and I appreciate you bringing this up, Dr. Stately.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking that I know a couple of other people who passed away in the last few days, and she's I was like I was thinking about it yesterday evening. I was kind of getting ready, folding laundry and kind of getting ready for work and my work week and stuff like that. And I was just thinking, God, we lost a lot of people in the last couple of weeks. And I think one of the things, like we were ending the last segment on, and we're talking about crying and how, like, you know, as men, we're not really told, you know, encouraged to cry. We're told sometimes not to cry. We talk about, you know, talk about our fear of crying and like how overwhelming it could be. Like, we don't want to necessarily do that because we feel like we'd never stop. And, you know, and like think about how much time we spend avoiding our feelings and avoiding the pain of the grief and things like that that are present in our everyday lives. And we don't even stop to think about like how much of a gift that is to have those emotions and feelings from Creator. That's a gift, right? Like, part of one way of thinking about, you know, grief and the pain that comes from that is to sort of like remember like that pain that we feel when we lose somebody that we love too early, too soon. You know, which is pretty much everybody, right? Like, you know, yeah. you don't ever lose somebody right on time or, you know, too late, right? You know, it's the timing is always sort of not good to lose someone that we love and care about. Mm-hmm. And I think that part of it is also to recognize, like, that's a measure of like how deep we love somebody, how deeply attached we are to them. How embedded they are in our everyday life, or how embedded they are in who we are as men. You know, the investment we've made in those relationships, the gifts that they've given us over the years or the period of time we've gotten to spend with them, you know, and how much it's an opportunity for us to reflect on like the richness and the gifts and the wonder that they brought into our lives, and to be appreciative and grateful for that. And that's a hard time. That's, you know, nobody ever gets there overnight. I don't think anybody goes like, oh, well, I think it's a natural process. It takes us time to get there, but it's important that we start on that road, right? And try to find a way to kind of find the beauty in the relationship and you know, hold on to those memories.
Right.
Just think of like, you know, and remember that tears are gifts. Those are the Creator gave us the ability to cry, because water is life, and water replenishes and water renews us. And like, here we are when in our grief, what are we doing? We're like, you know, we're crying, you know, water, where, you know, water is coming out of us and soothing us and helping us to sort of find another way of sort of resetting and replenishing and renewing us, even in our pain, right?
So, right. Some of us, or all of us, I should say, grieve differently, you know, and it's interesting you say, you know, the longer you grieve, the more you love the person, those kind of things. You know, we all grieve, we all are, you know, we all had people leave us, and hopefully we'll see them again as we know we will. But it's interesting, you know, it's we're not all in put the round peg in the square hole kind of thing. It's interesting.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, I think a lot of people do grieve different. Everybody has different, like, even think about it, like, from across the entire all of Turtle Island, all the nations had different ways of grieving and saying goodbye to their relatives, right? And you know, letting them go and helping them on that journey back to the Star Nation, and you know, walking that path back to Creator. We all had different ways we sort of like did that and acknowledged that and helped, and then ways in which we sort of memorialized individuals who were meaningful and important in our lives, you know. A wide variety of the ways that those things are done. I think what's sometimes challenging in our community contemporaneously is that a lot of people struggle with expressing grief in, you know, more sort of positive and healthy ways. They do things like they use alcohol, they might use substances, other substances like drugs. They might escape, they might dive into work and work harder, spend more time, you know, doing things that are going to distract them from their emotions, but that also pull them away from maybe their own children or other members of their family. You know, they end up, you know, moving further away from support rather than towards support. And, you know, I think one of the things I would say is, like, in moments when we experience loss and grief, that we try to find a way to, move towards the people who love us and towards the people who we can lean on for support. And I know there's different varying degrees of support in people's lives. Like some people don't have anyone, you know, some people don't have a family. Right. So they have to lean on family, friends or other people, you know, a chosen family perhaps. So, but, you know, I think it's one of the ways in which, you know, Native community writ large across many of the communities, not all, many of the communities, we have high rates of suicide. We have high rates of, you know, substance use, high rates of other things that, you know, prevent us or are oftentimes like linked to this sort of reluctance to sort of like, you know, open up our emotional life and sort of like, you know, make ourselves vulnerable and say, help me, I'm in pain. Mm-hmm. One of the things I try to teach my sons, and I tell my sons this, and I remind myself of this, is like, you know, my sons are Dakota, so I talk to them about, you know, I'm not sure, but we might go to Sundance in a couple weeks, but like, like you listen to those songs, those Sundance songs, and all of our other prayer songs in Dakota, like in the lodge, like every single one of our songs has the word omakia in it, which is like, you know, Dakota for help me, right? It's like, you know, it's a cry for help. It's a cry for engagement, right? We're asking, you know, Creator, you know, be with me. I'm struggling here. Be with me. It's a cry out for connection, right? And so, you know, remember those things. Those things were, you know, those are gifts that the Creator gave us when He sent us here as spirits to this planet to be human. And you know, we were perfect when we got here. We came here as spirits, perfect little spirits, right? And we got the spirit thing down. We don't really have, you know, our work here is to figure out how to be good relatives to each other, right, how to be good human beings to one another. And that is hard, right?
And people in our families too sometimes struggle. And I like what you kind of said earlier, is that, you know, mm-hmm. I've always believed you have two families, one you've been born with and one you acquire along the way. Because I feel close mm-hmm. to you, Dr. Stately, and I mean that sincerely. It's always really good to see you, and, you know, and outside of this. And I don't have that relationship with everyone that's on the show, by the way.
Yeah, no, I mean, I feel the same way. Like, it's always great to see you. I, you know, one of the things I always do with you when I see you in public, and I think we do it with each other, is we, you know, we like rib on each other, and we, you know, you're always trying to remind me of like how, you know, second class citizens, Native Ojibwe's are, and I like to remind you, like, you know, I like to put you in your place and remind you, like, you know.
Well, then, you know, the story goes that I talked to my nanny, who's my mother, and she said, "We're part Ojibwe now." And I went, What? I've been clashing with, yeah. But Peggy,
see there, Klein, now you don't have to be worried about being a social climber. You can just say, claim that you're Ojibwe.
Yeah. That'll be another show. Hey, we got like less than a minute left, Dr. Stately. You know, one thing I was wondering, if, you know, You're building a new clinic, and I'm wondering, is there places where people can donate, or is there not a GoFundMe, but kind of something like that where people can support your great work in the community and all over here?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, anybody can go to our website, which is nacc-healthcare.org. It's right there on the screen right now. But on our main page, you'll see a place where you can click a tab, and it can, you know, can say, you know, donate to the clinic. There's also, we have a number of ways in which you donate. Like, and we also have a little thing on there that tells you, like, oh, you donate $25, this is what it would pay for. This is what it would reimburse us for. This is what we could do with $25. This is what we could do for $5,000. This is those kinds of things. And you know what? Anything helps. Like, and if you can't give to us, give to the guy on the street who needs a cup of coffee or a cup of water or something like that. Give to, you know, be good to each other. That's the best gift you can give to us, is just be good to each other and support each other. Check on your relatives, check on your elders. You know, be kind to one another.
Well, Dr. Stately, Pinigigi, really, really nice show today, and I really appreciate the the talk. I feel really good. Up next, we have Edible Arts with Simone, and she's going to be talking about edible arts. That's going to be a big switch in the show, though.
Civic Media Radio Stations, providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
CBS News Brief. The CDC is warning that there are mosquitoes in the U.S. carrying malaria. CBS medical contributor Dr. Celine Gounder says cases are expected to grow through the summer.
The risk is higher where the local climate allows the mosquito that transmits malaria to survive most of the year.
CBS News meteorologist David Parkinson says more storms are in the forecast for the Northeast tomorrow.
The problem is that the ground is basically saturated, so there is at least a mild threat of some flash flooding, and that stretches from Pennsylvania all the way up into Maine, just something we're going to have to watch over the next several days.
The Wagner Group revolt lasted less than 24 hours with no march on Moscow. CBS's Ian Lee in Ukraine notes Yevgeny Prigozhin was upset with the defense ministry and that his forces would have to fall under their command July 1st.
This was a lot building up to this march to Moscow, but the one thing he was adamant about was that this wasn't a mutiny against Putin.
CBS News Brief. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
When it comes to achieving successful jury verdicts and settlements, one law firm stands out above the rest. Gingras Thompson & Wachs, a $6.2 million settlement for a woman permanently paralyzed as a result of medical malpractice. $4.9 million to members of a family injured due to the negligence of a truck driver and his employer. Call Gingras Thompson & Wachs today, 855-954-1186.
All in to win, Gingras Thompson & Wachs, GTWLawyers.com.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry
and Jane Mattenair.
Before I send boxes over, I have to take all of my things out. These boxes were interspersed with all sorts of things.
But who doesn't stuff their pants and their shoes into a box full of work documents to sort out later? Every time I leave a job, that's what I end up doing with my box of work papers. Bras go in there and just, you know, and I'll sort it out later.
As Goes Wisconsin, weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Why a RICO charge counselor? What's that mean to the layperson?
It was written for Organized Crime, Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act. That's where RICO comes from. The notion that you've got an entity whose purpose is to try to perpetuate some crime. It's more than just a singular event. It is a composite of kind of a corporate conspiracy doing things toward this illegal end.
Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Gary from Sussex. Hey, Gary.
Whose birthday is it? Is it both you guys' birthday or is it Dom's or Mike's?
It's my birthday today. Mike's was 2 days ago.
I'm going to sing a happy birthday, and I'm going to sing it the right way. Happy birthday to you, Mr. President of his radio station and his sidekick.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Tired of hearing only one side of the story? Do you want news and information from people who, like you, know what it's like to work hard every day and still struggle to make ends meet? Then tune in to The Rick Smith Show every weeknight from 8 to 10 p.m. right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Be part of the conversation. Tune in, turn on, and take back the American dream. The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Why a RICO charge counselor? What's that mean to the layperson?
It was written for Organized Crime, Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act. That's where RICO comes from. The notion that you've got an entity whose purpose is to try to perpetuate some crime. It's more than just a singular event. It is a composite of kind of a corporate conspiracy.
For any occasion. Check out the list of Eat Local Minnesota restaurants at eatlocalminnesota.com.
AM 950, KTNF, St. Louis Park, Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, thanks a lot. They do a great job, and we've been supporting Native Roots Radio for over 6 years, so we want to give a big peenie-geegie to that great organization. Hey, we're here with Simone Rendon, and Simone, we got scooped, Haley. Simone was on Channel 4, Channel WCCO show, and I just watched the clip before he came on, and I got butt hurt there, Simone, but we're happy to have you on today in second place. But what great work you do, and let's talk about what's happening, and welcome, Simone, owner of Edible Arts Minnesota. And I know you do many other things, and we can talk about that too later in the show, but let's talk about Edible Arts. And I want to welcome you to Native Roots Radio.
Buju, thank you so much. Edible Arts, I started, I think we figured out 10 years ago.
Whoa.
And just slowly, little bits by little bits, and in the last 3 years, it's been pretty much my full-time job. And so wherever I can, I go out and I harvest as much as I can, respectfully, you know, like I always leave some for the birds and for other people. But like down here in Hastings where I live, there's lots of the like black cap raspberries that are around the river and at different parkways and walkways. And so I go out and I just with my little buckets and I harvest them when they're ready. I also harvest choke cherries every fall when they come ready. I just spend a lot of time if I'm not outside harvesting whatever I can find. Like right now, the last thing I harvested was Saskatoon berries, which are also known as June berries. They're the trees with the red berries that most cities like will plant all over because they're really, really beautiful, but they taste really good too, made into jellies and jams and syrups.
Saw on this show that I won't mention that you got started in this by originally you were making cakes.
Yes. I was making cakes that were shaped like turtles. I made one for my nephew. He wanted one that looked like a baby cow. and it was, I mean, it ended up being a pretty large baby cow for him. But it looked like a baby cow. And I've done another one that was in the shape of a buffalo. So I've done like, and I think I have those up on the Edible Arts page in the pictures. I'm not sure. I'll have to relook at what photos I have available for people to see if they go to the Edible Arts Facebook. I know it's not on the Edible Arts Instagram because I'm still just getting familiar enough with Instagram in order to post things on a regular basis there. Yeah. My little learning curve.
Well, there's a button on there now that you can do both at the same time. And I do that accidentally all the time where I put something up on Facebook and it goes on Instagram. But hey, so that... this is a business. You sell waffles, maple syrups, pine. I saw you had a pine cone that was flavored. First of all, before I forget, how can people get a hold of you? I guess you just mentioned Facebook. Is there a website to have you come in and table or buy your delicious jams? How can we get a hold of you?
Every Thursday from 11 to 3, I'm at the Four Sisters Farmers Market, which is located at 1414 East Franklin, and that runs until October 26th. The only time I do not personally set up is if it is like 100 degrees or higher, because my products will melt. And so it doesn't make sense to be out there in the extreme heat. But if it's rainy, come in October when it's slightly snowing, I will still be set up. I don't mind the cold. I love being in Minnesota in our winters. So that's one way is to show up on Thursdays there. Or you can find me on Facebook at the Edible Arts MN page. My email is edible.arts.com. rendon@gmail.com and to email me there to either order, inquire about new products, or if there is an event coming up that you want me to table at, that's the best place to reach me is email.
Well, let's talk a little bit about these recipes and how healthy they are, because I did hear you talk about that a little bit. Where do you get the recipes? And I know they're gluten-free. They're all these really healthy ways to eat what you manufacture at the Edible Arts. I just like saying that, Edible Arts. and, you know, where did you get these recipes? Are they handed down or...
They are made up by me, trial and error. It took me 3 years to perfect the combination for the gluten-free wild rice, blue corn, waffle mix.
Yes.
I started by grinding my own wild rice, and that takes a lot of work to grind down the wild rice. And then somebody had told me that Red Lake Nation has ground wild rice flour. And so I do purchase from there because it's much better. It's a much finer flour from them. And the ratios, it took me 3 years to get the ratios right, because the gluten-free mix really does come out light and fluffy on the inside. And then on the outside, it's really nice and crispy when they're made into waffles. And I don't make the gluten mix anymore because it doesn't taste as good. Like the gluten-free, I have perfected it. So it's really, really good. And I love feedback. I do tell people that if you buy a product from me and you really don't like it, or you think that it could be improved in some way, please tell me, because I don't know what I don't know. So far, nobody has come back and said that they don't like anything or that I need to improve it in some way. And I do have a lot of repeat customers that come back weekly or biweekly to get more waffle mix and jams and jellies. My jams and jellies, I do put sugar in them. So I do hear from people who are diabetic that it's not something that they want a lot of. And one of the things that I pride myself on is I don't water my foods down. So like my choke cherry jelly really is juiced choke cherries, sugar, and pectin. So you should be able to grab a small spoonful, spread it on your toast, on your waffle, on your pancake, on whatever you are eating, and the flavors will be really, really strong. So you don't need 2 tablespoons like you would.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Less, and then it's not as powerful for you, because it's the real thing. And, you know, pectin, that's medicine. You know, that is medicine all the way. And I do believe, I'm trying to remember, I think you tabled somewhere in St. Paul at an art place for a couple Christmases ago, and I did have the waffle. I think you were making waffles, weren't you, there? Does that sound familiar? Yeah.
Yes. So it is the one place that I have figured out that I get enough space in order to sample out the waffles. And so they're like that big that you get to try. It is at Heather Friedley Art Studio, and we are actually setting up on the 29th of July. So that'll be the next time to come out. And yes, you could sample the waffle batter at that point.
Plus you have the maple syrup. That you sugar bush yourself? Is that correct?
Yes.
Ooh.
Yep. Every spring we sugar bush ourselves. I don't sell the maple syrup on its own. I add it into my product. So I have the pine cone syrup that has maple syrup in it. I have lavender syrup that I make that's with the maple syrup. What I do is after gathering all the sap, we use reverse osmosis in order to separate pure water from the sap. And I save that pure water. And so if I need water in order to make jelly with any of my products, that is the water I use, is from the actual maple trees. I do believe in a zero waste, and I don't want that water that we're splitting from the sap to just go down a drain. So I save as much of that as I possibly can in order to use all summer and fall long when I'm making my products.
Wow, here with Simone Rundon, and we're talking about edible arts, and it does sound like it's an art, and it's taken a few years for you to perfect quite a few of these products that you sell, but talk a little bit about the pine cones that you had on the television show. That was really interesting. I had no idea you could eat those.
Yes. So pine cones, we've been eating for centuries. They're high in vitamin C. One of the things that I love about making the pine cone syrup, after harvesting them, and you want to harvest them when they're small and green, and put them in water, and I boil them down until they pretty much fall apart, and then I strain off what would be considered pine cone juice, and then I mix it with the sugar and the maple syrup and the honey, and I boil it down to the right temperature to get syrup. It's high in vitamin C. If you, what I really enjoy mixing it with is nettle tea. Nettles are really high in iron. And when you're low in iron, they tell you to take your iron with vitamin C. So if you have strong nettle tea and you're adding a little bit of the pine cone syrup to it, you're getting that iron into your body and it's able to absorb a lot more easily than just by taking the nettle tea.
Wow, you're not just a edible artist, you're a scientist too. Hey, let's come back and talk a little bit more. Simone, can you hang with us for another quick segment?
Yes, I can.
All right, we're talking edible arts with Simone Rundon, and really learning a lot. Haley, you can just jump in if you have a question too. You're listening to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break.
Stay with us.
Hey, Olgama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
Hey, this is Robert Pilot. I taught in St. Paul Public Schools for over 25 years, and I want you to join the team and make a difference in our children's future. Right now, St. Paul Public Schools is offering hiring and retention bonuses up to $10,000 for a variety of teaching and classroom support positions for the next school year. Grow in a supportive and fulfilling public school setting. Limited bonuses are available, so don't delay. Apply at spps.org/careers.
Life is a journey, and the Doherty Family College at the University of St. Thomas will help you get where you want to go. Located in downtown Minneapolis, this affordable two-year college provides free textbooks, a laptop, meals, career coaches, and a Metro Transit pass, making DFC the perfect pathway to a bachelor's degree. Turn your dreams into reality at Doherty Family College at the University of St. Thomas. Apply today at dfc.stthomas.edu.
When it comes to mental health, making connections with others can be a way forward. How do you reach out when you need someone? What do you do to support those who struggle? Connections can bring comfort, hope, and joy. Find ways that work for yourself and others, like sending a text, sharing a moment, offering a hug, seeing an old friend, creating space to listen. Visit cmentalhealth.org. That's cmentalhealth.org. cmentalhealth.org.
Hi, this is Representative Sharice Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
How? Ho, Simone. Ho. Hey, we're here with Simone Rundon, and she's a professional. She's owner of Edible Arts in Minnesota. She's also an Indigenous doula and Indigenous lactation counselor, which is an amazing thing, bringing our community closer and closer together. Thanks for stopping in and really discussing your edible arts.
Yeah, thank you for having me on the show. One of the things that I want to definitely let people know about being a doula is there's some myth out there that a doula only wants to support a home birth or as natural birth as possible, which is true for some doulas. And then there are other doulas who are there to back the mom in whatever possible birth that she wants. And so I don't want people to think that, oh, I'm scheduled for a C-section, so I can't get a doula. Yes, you can. Any birthing person can get a doula. And our job is to back you to get the birth that you want as the birthing person. And it's okay to meet with a few different doulas and to figure out which doula works best with you because it's your birthing experience.
Do people get a hold of you, or are you with an organization? Now we're going to talk a little doula here, but I think it's important that our listening audience that doesn't know what we're talking about, that we can inform them a little bit.
Yeah, so I am part of the Nininde Doulas through the Division of Indian Work in Minneapolis. And so you could contact the Division of Indian Work, or you could contact me directly. So I get my own clients. I also get clients referred to me through Division of Indian Work. And I think right now there are 17 different doulas.
Wow. That are
within the Nininde program, and they're all Native doulas. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to be Native to get a doula. There are certain things that we can offer for free for our Indigenous moms. But it is also like, there is a slight charge if you are not Native, so that way I get paid for my time. Mm-hmm. But it is a great, great resource to have for a pregnant person to be able to have the resources of a doula who can help navigate the birthing process, the hospital process, all of those things, questions that might arise. Like, we are there to fully back that pregnant person to have the best delivery that they can have.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. What does a doula do? So it's from beginning process, teaching the client or the birth mother and the father what's coming ahead. And then you said some scheduling too that you help with?
We could. Each doula is a little bit different on what, and it all depends on when the parent request a doula. So most places right now are people like request a doula towards the end of the pregnancy, mm-hmm. like 30 weeks and beyond. But if you find out that you're pregnant, it's never too early to get a doula, because mm-hmm. you want that relationship with your doula to actually have a trust between the two of you, which means there's a lot of talking and support that happens even in those early months and weeks. But there are some people who are 41 weeks and getting ready to go into the hospital next week who are finally like, I need a doula. And we're there to help those parents too.
Wow.
I have a question.
Go ahead, Haley. Yeah.
How is Indigenous doula work differ from maybe non-Indigenous doula work? Is there anything that you change up or is requested?
Yes, they're requested is like being able to smudge. We are allowed to bring some of our medicines into the hospital rooms in order to smudge the mom, the baby, different teas that we bring, different traditional ceremony stuff, depending on what the mom is. We try and connect her with a doula that can actually assist her in her ways. Like, I'm Ojibwe and Lakota, and so a Ho-Chunk ceremony pregnancy might be different. And we would definitely want to make sure that we get somebody who matches the best or who can follow that mom and say, okay, so tell me what to do so that way I can be respectful of what it is that you need during this birthing process.
Sure. I love that.
Wow. It's like a partnership, and you're guiding this woman that's pregnant through the whole process, and also in a good way, offering medicines and maybe some jam on the side too. Oh,
yes.
Good one. Yeah. Cool. Well, Simone, give us your Facebook address again so people can reach out, because believe you me, this is like just not some thrown together product. This is a professionally beautifully done edible arts, and it really is an art. And I see you because I go Thursdays too, and so does Haley, and we see you there every week. And I'm so glad we're able to get you on.
Yes. So Facebook is Edible Arts MN. And that is also the Instagram handle is Edible Arts MN. So either one will get you to my page. And I do my best to post like where I'll pop up next. Cause I do a lot of pop-up markets around the Twin Cities as much as I can, but I am always as much as possible. As long as, like I said, as long as it's not 100 degrees or higher, I'm at the farmer's market, Four Sisters Farmer's Market, every Thursday.
Well, I think everyone should get to that, St. Paul, that artist on, what is it? Ford Parkway? No, not Ford Parkway, 7th Street.
Yep, West 7th Street, right across from the Schmidt Brewery Building, artists. So it's a small gallery. It's called Friedley Art Studio. And if I had the address, I would tell you what it is. But I know it's Kitty Corner from Case and Keg, if you look that up. and it'll be on the 29th from 12 to 5. And there'll be a couple other Indigenous artists there. We got somebody to come in and do face painting, and she does like floral Ojibwe face painting.
Wow.
Gorgeous work. We have another person who's coming with beaded earrings. And
well, definitely bring the kids. Definitely bring the kids. And then also, I liked bringing it up too, because I know you were giving out free samples of the waffles. So I'm going to go there hungry and have some waffles. Haley, before we let Simone go, do you have any other questions?
No, I just, maybe, are you going to have more pine cone cookies at the farmer's market next week?
I do plan to make a set on Wednesday, so I will have,
perfect.
I'm hoping to bring 24. So yeah, and they're pine cone cookies, and they're about this big, and they're really filling, and I put pine cone in the cookie batter, but I also put pine cones on the top, and the pine cones on the top are really chewy, like a date. They're really good.
Wow. Hey, thanks for stopping in. We got to do this again real soon. A lot of information, and plus talking about doulas a little bit too. That was really interesting. Simone, thank you so much for stopping in.
Thank you, Robert. Thank you, Haley.
Yeah, good to see you.
Right on. Hey, that was Simone Rendon, and wow, that was awesome, Haley. A good guest, and a lot of information, and nothing like eating healthy food. And I really like that talk about using less jam, so there's less sugar, even though there's sugar in the jam, because it's so, I want to say powerful, but it's a powerful taste, so you don't have to use as much. So, wow, that makes so much sense.
Right.
Yeah, so, you know, that's rounded up here. Get ready for tomorrow's show. You've been listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I want to thank Dr. Stately and Simone Rendon. What a great show. And if you're listening to the show, you are part of the resistance. We're still here. We are the seventh generation.
Look up cheese curds. You'll find this basic definition. Wet pieces of curdled milk.
Huh?
Well, it should also include the word delicious. As we continue to celebrate June Dairy Month, do you know how much milk is needed to make 1 pound of cheese curds? 16 ounces, 64 ounces, or 160 ounces, 10 pounds of milk? The answer coming up.
It actually is a sound of freshness.
Rachel Kerr is talking about squeaky curds. She's with the Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin and a bit of a cheese nerd.
Those elastic protein strands rub against the enamel of your teeth and create that characteristic sound.
The squeak turns stretchy when battered and deep fried. Some believe the idea to fry globs of cheese happened by accident. I consider it a happy accident. Okay, so did you guess it takes 10 pounds of milk to make 1 pound of curds? Now we want to know your favorite and where do you get your squeaky or deep fried curds? Go to our Civic Media Facebook page to share your answers. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.